Demand for energy is growing, and so is the need for American oil and natural gas. It's time to turn the lights on. America's resources are abundant. Our nation is a global leader in reducing emissions and innovators in delivering more energy sources to secure our future. 9 in 10 Americans agree. American oil and natural gas are vital to our economy. Visit lightsonenergy.com. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast brought to you by API. This is the show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Thanks for joining us for episode 334.
Hey, audience, if this show goes quicker than normal, it's for a very specific reason, in that Paige is still coming down off her pre-workout stimulant. She's coming back from a coffee meeting. So between the two of us, we are caffeinated up today. It's true.
It is. It is true. Yeah.
And then another quick note. I had a couple of people reach out saying they don't like the API commercial that's in front of the beginning of this show. Sorry. API is a great organization. We support them. They support the show. So hopefully you can appreciate the fact they are supporting the show, because without them supporting the show and sponsoring it, we wouldn't be here. And the commercial is not that bad.
Actually, I haven't listened to it, so I have no idea.
Informative, a little API commercial. So if you don't like the commercial there, just hit that 15-second skip button. But we would appreciate actually if you'd listen to the
message. We got
to
make money somehow, people.
Yeah. Somebody has to pay for all this global complex that we have to run.
Yeah, no kidding.
Security team of dogs and
hosts. Dogs and hosts. Okay. All right.
And before we get into the news articles, real quick, if you're a young professional in the oil and gas industry, in the energy sector, or thinking about getting into it, there's a group of people I know in the UK, and they're trying to basically create a positive image for the energy industry. The whole focus of this group is to basically match up young professionals and people that are entering the industry with the more senior people, almost think of it as a mentorship type of program. And they're creating these type of network opportunities and career events where you can actually meet the old guys and old girls in the industry, the geoscientists, the geophysicists, the project accountings, the project managers, all that stuff, to basically just kind of share stories, help you get a job, and actually help you come into our industry. So if you'd like to check it out, if you're a young person, like I said, that's just getting into the industry or thinking about getting industry, you'd like a little help, there's a link in the show. Big shout out to Geraldo for sending this my way. Thank you so much, Geraldo, for helping our world's young people enter the oil and gas industry. This is awesome.
And if you're listening to this the day it comes out, come see us at NAEP. We're at booth 453.
Yep. Come swing by. Come say hi. Say you listen to the show, and we'll give you a hot sauce or a sticker or a discount for some OGG and merch.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the news stories. Macquarie, B of A weigh in on Aramco capacity pause.
So this is some of the analysts in the world looking at what's going on with Saudi Aramco. And Saudi Aramco's statement, I think this was past Tuesday, that they're basically going to maintain their production at 12 million barrels a day and not go up to 13 million barrels a day. You read through this article and they go into, is this a short-term pause or a longer-term departure from the prior plan to actually do increase production at 13 million barrels a day? And they're not really sure. They're reading a lot of stuff in here that's speculation. Hey, analysts, let me tell you the deal. Straight up, they can't produce more. So they don't want anybody to know they can't produce more. And financially, it's into their own best interest to limit supply. That way they keep prices up. Right now, prices are not horrible. I haven't looked at what oil and natural gas is going for today. However, it will go up this year. The demand's going up. And regardless of what Aramco says and what the rest of OPEC says, they are really struggling to maintain the level of production they're doing now. And it's really hard for them to increase any more. And with a lot of the Russian oil off the general market, although it is on the black market, that's not able to fill in the gaps. And with what's going on currently in U.S. politics, it's harder for us to fill in the gaps. The capacity's there, especially here in the U.S. We could easily, easily take care of this energy shortage that we're still in globally. But when you look at these analysts trying to figure out why Saudi Aramco is not increasing production another million barrels a day, quite frankly, I don't think they can. So that's what's really going on here. At some point, as they have a lot of CapEx invested last year in new production projects for this year, and actually all of OPEC does, at some point this year, they will be able to increase production. But right now, I just don't think they can, regardless of what they're telling you and regardless of what the analysts are believing out there.
Yeah. Okay, so next one, USA unlikely to return all of Venezuela's sanctions after ruling.
Earlier last year, I was talking about Maduro's great for what's going on. He's going to have open elections. That Chevron's finally starting to move some of that heavy complex crude out of Venezuela to U.S. refineries, which we love. We have a long history of years ago working with Venezuela until they basically nationalized everything and threw all the nationalized oil companies and the super majors out. I had high hopes in Maduro actually making a difference and doing good stuff in Page. And the poor people of Venezuela, they just don't get a break. But Page, it looks like it's back to politics as usual. And I hope I'm
not surprised by this at all.
Yeah. So what does he do? He says they're going to have an open election, which is the whole reason that the U.S. removed the sanctions against Venezuela. It's like finally we're going to have democracy return to Venezuela. Well, his version of democracy is the people that are running against him. Guess what he does? Puts him in jail. Now, don't get me wrong. As an American, there are times I wish I could put some of our politicians in jail so I don't have to deal with them. But
honestly,
that's not,
they're putting themselves in jail right now.
Yeah. But that's not how it works. He put opposition basically in jail. And hopefully what the U.S. does is revamp the existing sanctions or the previous sanctions that we had, because the whole reason he did that is he swore that they would have a democratic process. Now he's going back on his promise. However, our current administration is facing a pretty rough reelection cycle right now here in the U.S. And one of the things that, regardless of what political side you're on, one of the things that really influences voters is basically the price at the fuel pump. How much are you paying for gasoline or diesel in the U.S.? Well, guess what? If we don't put sanctions against Venezuela and we keep importing that heavy complex crude, which makes a beautiful blend of diesel and makes a really fine gasoline, prices will stay down at the pump. So I suspect that our current political administration will not revamp the sanctions, even though they said they would, because they want to keep pump prices low because we're heading into an election cycle. Now, what does this do for Maduro? This more or less solidifies his place in office. It also bankrolls his government to do things that we probably don't want him doing. Now, of course, our State Department said that they're reviewing the sanctions policy toward Venezuela, but they have not made a decision. That decision should have came instantly once his oppositions were thrown in jail. This whole mess is really, I think, based around U.S. political cycle that's going around the election cycle. And I think wrong decisions are being made right now. That's not going to help anybody. It's not going to help the citizens of Venezuela who have to live under another semi-dictator at this point. At some point, if it continues, he will be a dictator. And it's also, even though it's cool that we're able to get this heavy complex crude out of Venezuela, with a corrupt government, the money, which I was hoping would go to the people because they've been suffering for decades, is going to politicians' pocket. And it's not going to feed the people. It's not going to roads or education or housing or hospitals or any of that stuff. I really think the sanctions need to come back. I know they should come back. Don't think they will. I will be surprised if our current administration does anything.
Oh, no, they're too busy auditing permits for LNG export. They're not going to do anything, which is sad. All right, what do we have next? We have, okay, so Rystad Energy identifies 36 potential high impact wells for 2024.
All right, audience, I'm going to quiz you. What is a high impact well? I'm listening. Can't hear you.
That was dumb.
Well, let me tell you. Basically, a high-impact well is any well that's able to produce 100 million barrels or more of oil and over a trillion cubic feet of natural gas that operates in the middle of nowhere, what they call a frontier area. When you think about a high-impact well or high-impact discovery, think of it as finding the mother lode in the desert, right, or in the ocean or in the jungle somewhere. And what's interesting is Rystad in this article, actually, you should read through this. The link's in the show notes. They've identified 36 potential high-impact wells for 2024. Now, the cool thing about that is that it's a much bigger jump than the number they identified last year, which is good. Remember, the globe is still in an energy shortage. We still need more hydrocarbons to fix that energy shortage. So by these wells being identified, and actually more from last year, it's actually good. Now, remember, these wells are not in production yet. They're in the process of going to production, and that actually takes a little while. The other thing that's going on is last year, 2023, even though they identified, I think, 25 or 26 high impact wells, they actually, a lot of them weren't drilled because it was so expensive last year to drill with inflation. Well, those drilling costs caused by inflation have actually come down. And I think a lot of these wells will actually be drilled, which is good.
Yeah.
Now, here's where you have to get in the finances, though. It costs a lot of money to drill these type of wells. They tend to be in complex formations. They tend to be deep. They tend to be in the ocean. And when they're in the ocean, they tend to be in deep water or ultra deep water. Mm-hmm. And so it's a struggle financially for it to make sense. If you look at the actual finances of these wells that were drilled last year, only 70% of the wells that were supposed to be drilled last year were actually drilled. And of those 70 wells, only about 40% actually were financially positive, which means when they figured everything out, it made sense to actually go in production after they drilled the well. Let's see if we could do a little bit better this year. These wells, when these wells get drilled, they're scattered around the world. A lot of them are in Africa, a lot of them in deep water, ultra deep water. And what I'm hoping for is that the success rate will actually go up. And if the success rate goes up, which it should go up, a lot of these wells will come online right about the time that I think crude prices will go up. If we can get the production, remember, these wells are called high impact wells because of how much they can actually produce. I might actually be wrong about crude prices going up because this will come on the market. A lot of it's going to depend on politics. A lot of it's going to depend on what's going on with OPEC. But the world burns 100 million barrels a day of oil. And these wells together, if they come online, if we get them all online at the same time, which will not happen, people, don't think I'm saying they'll come online at the same time. But you're looking at about 300 million barrels of production when the world needs 100 million barrels. That's significant.
Right.
We'll keep an eye on this. I love this type of stuff because this is the combination of the old school wildcatters where you're drilling in places that you're not sure if you could be successful or make money, along with some of the highest technology mankind's ever invented.
Right on. Okay, so next up, January has been a roller coaster for commodities.
Boy, has it.
I'm so glad January's over, to be honest.
If you don't know this, crude oil is a commodity. In fact, I think it's one of the true few global commodities, and I've said this 100 times. Crude oil goes for the exact same price here in Houston, Texas today as it's going in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, as it's going to Tokyo, Japan, as it's going in London, England, and that is the definition of a commodity, a true global commodity. So I don't want to get into the steel market and everything else, although it is tied to oil and gas, and if you're really into this stuff, you need to understand especially what steel is doing. But the oil market is interesting. A lot of the analysts expected that the prices would stay low the first quarter of this year, and I agree with them because they are staying relatively low. The price has softened a bit since the fourth quarter or third and fourth quarter of last year. I do think price is going up. That was in my predictions. The strength of the dollar went up, so the index went up, which actually helps. Inflation's going down, which actually helps with actual drilling and production costs. However, the market still is really worried about geopolitical uncertainties. I don't need to rattle off all the stuff that's going on in the world that can affect the price of crude oil, and it's getting insane, especially what's going on right now in the Mediterranean. Except just remember, though, that oil prices did drop a bit and they haven't come back to the December levels. I do think they will exceed the December levels probably starting around March of this year. And then about the third quarter of this year, I expect demand, global demand, to be much higher than supply. And I think prices will go up actually quite substantially. We'll keep an eye on this. Just remember, all that trading, all that volatility in the oil market, a lot of it's driven by perception and not by actual supply and demand. Supply and demand eventually straightens the market out every time. And as much as we talk about politics on the show, even though I try not to, the bottom line is even politics eventually loses out to market demand. So as long as the market demand is there, and the supply will always be financed to try to keep up with demand.
Okie doke. Even tankers carrying Russian fuels have started avoiding the Red Sea. Boy, that's something.
Let me break this down. Imagine you're watching an old Western movie and you had the bad cowboys and the good cowboys.
Right.
And the bad cowboys don't want to travel where there's more good cowboys than they are because they can be outgunned. Mm-hmm. But the bad cowboys are happy to go travel where there's other bad cowboys because they're like in friendly country.
Right.
But what happens when the bad cowboys meet cowboys that are so bad that even the bad cowboys are scared to go there? That's what's going on in the Red Sea right now. So basically, Russia is starting to avoid the Suez Canal, bringing all their black market oil to Asia because they're worried about the Houthi rebels, which is crazy because Russia's funding some of that. And boy, I'm going to get hate mail for that one. But these tankers aren't willing to take the financial risk. And you got to remember, this is what referred to a few episodes ago, maybe it's last year, as the ghost fleet. These are not modern state tankers. These are tankers that were mothballed that honestly probably should not be carrying anything.
Right.
Ocean,
yeah.
That are probably dangerous to the crews. It would not take much to take them out of commission, unlike a modern tanker. And this is black market oil. And like I said, in the last couple episodes, they're typically flying under a different flag than the Russian flag.
Right.
When the bad guys are scared of the other bad guys.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's saying something.
This is what's going on. Now, it is going to be interesting to see what happens. So literally today, the U.S. just took action in the Red Sea. We had some military action by the U.S. Armed Forces. This was not the typical drone and dump. This was actually armed aircraft taking out strategic objectives from the Houthi rebels themselves. Don't know what the result of that is yet. It's literally way too early. If the U.S. and the European allies can calm that area down and get rid of these pirated attacks, you may see Russia come back in. However, if this continues and Russia's having to take a longer route to Asia, you're going to see these tankers break down. You're going to see spills happen. You're going to see crews need to be rescued. And that in itself may actually help snuff out some of this black market oil more than all the sanctions that the U.S. and Europe has placed on Russia. Interesting. Once again, to my previous comment, this is in some ways the market, even though it's the black market, fixing itself. So we're going to keep an eye on this.
Yep. So California and big oil are splitting after a century-long affair.
Even though you make fun of my segues, my analogies, the fans like them. Let's do this one too. Since I have a cowboy, let's talk about a couple that have been married for a long time and then they're getting divorced. Okay.
Is that what's happening here?
So basically, all the major oil companies in California have been married for a very long time. For about 100 years, they've been married. And California has become the bad spouse and not wanting to spend any time with the oil companies, not want to take them out to eat, not want to take them on dates, not want to spend any money on them. And now California is looking at younger spouses, except these younger spouses are fake. And these fake younger spouses have promised.
This is horrible.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll quit my analogy. I thought it was good.
No.
Okay. The oil and gas industry has been in California for over 100 years. At one point, California was one of the largest producers in the U.S. and one of the largest producers in the world. Because of politics, all that has been slowly strangled and killed. Both ExxonMobil and Chevron, I spoke about this a couple episodes, have huge write-offs of the state of California. What's sad is if you go to any of the beaches in central to southern California and just look in the ocean, you can see these production platforms that are sitting on conventional reservoirs that are full. They're not even close to being depleted or even halfway there. Mm-hmm. And the pipeline infrastructure is built to bring that beautiful California oil to the refineries in California. Gasoline and diesel should be free for the citizens of California, except they're cut off. And what does California do to meet its gasoline and diesel needs? They're imported from where? Countries like Russia. You think the Russian oil is safer for the environment than California's own oil that's sitting right off the coast? Basically, Chevron and Exxon goes, screw this, we're out of here. They're writing all their assets off. They're trying to sell what they have. Unfortunately, the people that we love up in Kern County, that's the place that's going to suffer the most because of California Energy's policy. Nobody's putting money back into their business, in the oil business, I should say. And now the major owners of those fields in California are selling them for pennies on the dollar because they honestly, they just want
and
out.
Who would want to buy it though?
Well, they're having trouble selling it.
Right.
They're also having trouble. The state actually had some leases and nobody bid on them because nobody knows if they spend the money and time, if they're able to do anything with those hydrocarbons.
Yeah.
I think about 50% of all the oil and gas drilling permits in California. Now, remember, trying to get a drilling permit in California is almost impossible. But about 50% of those drilling permits that were issued are just sitting there empty, unused, because nobody wants to take the risk. I love this quote from UC Berkeley's Kamen, who's a science envoy in the Obama administration. California can't have both. That means that today there is no room for oil and gas. And that's that. Let's see. But this is really sad for the citizens of California because you're losing
really
all those jobs, all that tax money, and then you're still buying crude oil and natural gas. You're just buying it from countries that don't care about the environment at all. And you're actually buying it from countries that don't care about you.
Or the environment.
It's just a mess. I've gotten some flack saying I make fun of California too, so I'm not going to make fun. I will say this much, though. I do feel for y'all, guys. Do you know what's going to be the price at the pump in a couple years in California? It's going to be insanity.
It's already insane.
And the price to recharge your electric vehicle is going to go up exponentially as well. Buy a horse.
Oh, man. All right. Let's move on. Shell to shut down German oil refinery.
It's an interesting tactic. You know, of course, Shell doesn't call me, although they probably should sometimes. That's my opinion. They're basically taking a conventional refinery, they're shutting it down, and then they're going to stand it back up to produce what's called base oil. So think of almost like the motor oil you put in your car. Mm-hmm. The motor oil is made from base oil. So they're converting the hydrocracker unit to a production unit for Group 3 base oils, which I said is predominantly used for lubrication. They're doing that so they can reduce their Scope 1 and 2 carbon emissions by 62,000 tons a year, which is substantial. And they're doing this to help cut overall greenhouse emissions. However, one of the things that they're doing by doing this is they're significantly, in this area of Europe, they're significantly cutting down their refining revenue base. The base oil market is steady, but it's very low margin stuff. It's not a high margin business at all. It's almost cutthroat, actually, one of the truth. Whereas a lot of the products made from a conventional refinery, if you time it right, can be very high margin. So I get that Shell is doing this to cut their CO2 emissions, one scope two emissions. However, Shell, I think you're still going down the wrong route, especially if you want to stay relevant to your bigger competitors like Exxon and Chevron. I think the trying to move to renewables too quick doesn't make business sense. I think history has proven that. And I really think that instead of doing this, what you should have done is figure out a way to retrofit parts of this refinery to make it a little bit cleaner. We talked about, I think last episode, Exxon did the same thing in the Baton Rouge refinery. Mm-hmm. Switching to a low margin business like base oil, to me, just doesn't make sense. Now, what I don't know is if there's any incentives, financial incentives from the German government, which they could be, which could make this thing a better deal for Shell. Not something I would have done, but they did it, and they did it for a reason. And once again, we'll keep an eye on the story.
Okay. Total Energies converts feedstocks from plastic waste into circular polymers at Texas plant.
This is amazing. We've talked about this before. If you're listening to me and you have that separate garbage can for recycled goods, I hate to tell you, but the odds are nothing's being recycled in the U.S. It's all going to the same landfill. There's a backstory for that. And one of the problems with recycling is the separation of the different parts and pieces. You got to separate plastics to the different types of plastic. That's what that little number is in that triangle. So on plastic products, you got to separate metal from aluminum or ferrous metal from aluminum, separate glass, all that stuff. And one of the problems with plastics is that in the right circumstance, the right plastic is actually very easy to recycle, but nobody gathers the plastic to actually have it be recycled. They'd rather just throw it away. One of the things that they're doing in this LaPorte plant is they're taking all this polypropylene, think water bottles, and they're actually grinding it up and they're recycling it and they're going to turn it to food grade packaging. So think of all the food you buy in the grocery store has that clear wrap on it.
Uh-huh.
Your plastic water bottle is going to turn into that clear wrap, which I think this is freaking genius. And the polypropylene is actually one of those plastics that's relatively easy to gather up and recycle. So Total's is a joint venture doing this. The feedstock is coming from the polymer plant in LaPorte, Texas. Then it's going to Total Energy's New Hope facility to actually remanufacture it. I think this is wonderful. I'd like to see much more of this. When you talk about changing things to make this planet a better place, to make it cleaner and less impact for the environment, this is something that really makes a freaking difference. There's a lot of stuff out there. Like I just talked about the Shell refinery trying to reduce its scope one, scope two. Quite honestly, that's not going to make much of a difference. Being able to recycle these plastics makes a huge difference in our world and our environment. And I love they're doing this. And here's the part that makes it wonderful. They're going to make a profit at it.
Yeah.
And I'll have people push back and we go, big oil makes a profit. Do you not understand that if somebody doesn't make a profit recycling these plastics, they won't ever be recycled? Wanting to recycle it to save the world is a great strategy, but it's not a business and it won't ever scale. Recycling to make a profit is very scalable, right? And this is the type of stuff we want. So this is awesome. Congratulations, Total.
Okay. UK awards 24 licenses for North Sea exploration with promise of more to come.
Hey, Europe. That lack of Russian natural gas and crude oil actually made you change your opinion on this drilling for oil. This is wonderful. I'm sure Just Stop Oil is super excited about this. 24 licenses, North Sea, more to come. 17 different companies actually bid on this, which was great. Typically, North Sea is dominated by Equinor, Shell, and BP. That's it. So you had 17 different companies bid on this, which is great. So there's competition out there. 74 blocks for expirations. This is the 33rd oil and gas leasing round. It was launched late in 22. Over 900 blocks were made available. And like I said, when I say 700 were actually awarded. The expiration areas is the central North Sea, northern North Sea, and west of the Shetland areas. Those are areas that are already have some production facilities, but there's still a lot of room to tap into other reservoirs. Then the other blocks that aren't part of those would probably go be drilled and completed much later. But this is great that the Regulatory Commission over there put these blocks on sale. It's great that companies bid on it. It's great that these licenses were issued so we can actually go drill and start producing this energy that the world needs. And if anybody needs it, it's Europe. Just great for everybody. I'm kind of joking when I said I'm sure that Just Stop Oil like this. I'm sure they hate this.
Well, clearly it was sarcasm.
Yeah. But since all this is in North Sea, would I suggest Just Stop Oil if you really want to make a difference? That part of the North Sea I described actually has icebergs in it a lot of the year. The best thing you do to interfere with this, if you want to stop this oil production, is go glue yourself to the icebergs. No, seriously. So Just Stop Oil, go glue yourself to the icebergs.
Go and win some Darwin Awards. Yep. Yeah. All right. Eni completes $4.9 billion purchase of Neptune Energy.
Yeah. Is it Eni or Eni? I've always called it Eni.
I've always called it Eni.
Yeah. So Eni, Eni, whatever.
That's
you're
Eni.
Now Eni. This is another merger and acquisition. This is the time of the century that this is going to go on. We've talked about this a whole bunch. This is once again going to allow Eni to have more infrastructure, more operations in Norway. This is going to allow them to capitalize on the demand for energy in Europe. If you don't know Neptune, they're what I would call a mid-sized producer. Mm-hmm. I think they're about 130 or 140 million barrels of oil a day. By bringing in Eni, that they'll be able to take that and move that up to 200, 250 barrels of oil or equivalent a day. This merger was not one I saw coming, but quite honestly, there are so many of them happening right now. I don't know what's coming because I don't have time to look at every single one of them out there, but it makes total sense financially. And the new larger company will be able to do projects that the two individual companies together couldn't do themselves in parts of the world that they weren't that strong in. So Australia, North Africa, Indonesia, love seeing this. Once again, most of the jobs will be kept. Unfortunately, the jobs that are duplicate, like HR and legal stuff, some of those will be lost. But this industry is hiring like crazy right now. So I suspect even the people that get laid off, they'll be laid off with a good package and they'll pick up a new gig rather quickly.
Right on. Okay, no nation has achieved industrialization solely through solar or wind power per the Namibia Energy Minister.
Saying it like it is. What's happening in Africa right now, and it's really a damn shame, is I think Africa is the next future boom in the oil and gas industry. And I'm talking about next couple hundred years. And they have their problems. It's corruption, lack of infrastructure, and everything else. But the people there have basically lived, most of the people have lived a very substance life, so think poor life, for a very long time. And now we're able to bring prosperity to all the different nations in Africa because of their abundant hydrocarbon resources. However, you have people here and people in Europe sitting in their 3,000 square foot houses, driving their three different electric cars, telling Africa they should not tap into hydrocarbons, that it's not good for the environment. And some of the African nations are actually suffering from this because they're not getting the investment dollars because the people that would normally dump money in hydrocarbons believe that Africa should move to renewables as soon as possible. That is so wrong on so many different levels.
Most of them don't even have electricity.
Most of them don't have shoes.
Most of them don't have floors. Yeah.
Right? There's babies being born by candlelight, if there's candlelight available.
Yeah.
This is really messed up. I love the energy minister Namibia basically saying, quit telling us what to do. You did it. Now you're telling us we can't.
Right.
Is what he's saying. And his country actually is one of the countries that are fighting. They're pushing hard against the anti-oil and gas groups, basically saying, why are you denying my people prosperity? You have it. I love the fact he's being straight up about it, that no nation has achieved industrialization solely through solar wind power. It's very true. Like I said, I think Africa is the future for the world as far as hydrocarbon production. It's going to take a long time to get there. What we need to do is not let current political and public sentiment keep the African nations from developing their own resources that they own.
Yeah.
His name is Tom. Good job, Tom, for saying it like it is. Would love to actually get him. If anybody knows him, the Namibia Energy Minister, I'd love to get him on the Energy Leader Show, on Paige's show.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Mexico president admits fuel production still short to reach energy self-sufficiency.
And you want to guess why he's saying that right now?
No.
It's the end of his presidential term.
Oh, yeah. Well, duh.
Take a lesson from our screwed up politics, Mexico. Current president ran on part of his platform was that he was going to make Mexico energy independent, which means they would not need to import fuels or crude oil, natural gas. They're not going to make it. They're actually come sort of close, but they're just not going to make it. This article is talking about how they may make it. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen at all. And there's several reasons for that. And it's really sad. Mexico has the hydrocarbon reserves, abundant hydrocarbon reserves, abundant shale reserves, abundant conventional reservoir. Your dad, right, was punching holes in the Gulf of Mexico on the Mexico side, wasn't he?
Yeah. He worked out there for quite a while.
So they have the hydrocarbons. The problem is they can't get them out of the ground efficiently. And they can't do that for a bunch of reasons. One is corruption, and the other one is the state-owned oil.
It's always corruption.
It's sad. It really is. And no matter what you try to do as a leader in the country, as a president or whatever, the corruption will never disappear until the Mexican people understand that it's not okay. The Mexican people, and this isn't a Mexican thing. This happens all over the world. It happens in Brazil and Guatemala and Panama. The Mexican people have to go, you know what? It's not okay to steal electricity. It's not okay to hot tap a pipeline. Until the people understand that stealing electricity, that culture of being okay with that, is the same as politicians stealing their own natural resources or taking bribes, it's not going to disappear. And it's changed a lot, but that's still a big part of it. The Pemex's refineries, I think they have 6 refineries. If you look at their input versus their output, there's a big delta, which means somehow magically product is disappearing from the refinery, right? Pemex actually bought the Deer Park refinery here, right? It used to be the Shell Deer Park refinery. They actually bought that one. And I always like looking at the refinery metrics from that old Shell Deer Park refinery to Pemex's 6 refineries in Mexico. It's about a 12% difference in efficiencies. That means about 12% of the products the in-state Mexico refineries are producing just disappear. And it's not disappear, it's corruption. It's being sold to black market. It's being given away or whatever. You don't see that with the same company's refinery that's sitting right here in Texas. You don't see that delta. But anyway, the president's not going to hit his goal. It's going to be close. And I don't think he's going to get reelected. I have enough problems staying on top of our politics. I do try to stay on top of countries that are close to us that we get along with, like Canada and Mexico, because it's important. It affects our economy a lot.
Right.
But then I do try to stay on top of politics in other oil producing parts of the world that affect oil prices. But they're just not going to hit this. Now, they have a couple of new refineries they're gearing up in the southern state of Tabasco, which is actually where the pepper comes from, if you didn't know that, Tabasco pepper. But they're not going to get that online. They're saying these refineries will be online shortly. But that's not true. It's going to be 2 years if you look at their rate of construction and getting this thing lit. It's going to be 2 years.
They need to talk to Germany about setting
They hired some Germans. It would have been done last year. López Obrador promised during his administration to stop exporting crude so it can be refined at home. However, Mexico still is continuing to export crude, about 1 million barrels of oil last year. And that's so they can actually have other people refine it and the refining fuel ship back in. Once again, this is a little bit of a political mess in our brothers and sisters south of the border. Let's see what happens there next election cycle.
Right on. And that's it.
Told you to go by fast because we're caffeinated up. Newsletters. You heard me say this before. Just sign up for both of them. Go to the show notes. Sign up for the Sunday update, which is really cool and fun and kind of quirky. And then sign up for Oil and Gas Events, where you would have heard a long time ago that we'll be at NAEP. And there are passes in there for stuff. And it's a good newsletter if you want to stay on top of Oil and Gas Events. Weekly rig count. Where are we?
We're down 2 in the United States at 619. Canada's up 2. I guess that's, we just gave them 2 rigs. Canada's at 232. And then internationally, we're up 10 at 965.
Okay. Very important, audience. We have something going on that only you can help with. For the longest time, Paige Wilson, my co-host of the show, also host of Industry Leaders and also host of 5 Stars.
And Under.
And Under. Has been winning with the merchandise. There are more people walking around with her face on their shirts they bought through a merch store than any of our other podcasts. So Paige is dominating the merch store. Now she has a challenger.
Jordan Driscoll. With his cup, man, his mug.
Selling his coffee mug is nowhere near catching up. Nowhere near catching up to Paige, but he has the second spot. So if you listen to Jordan Driscoll's show, which was just renamed.
Yes.
Right?
Context is for kings.
Yep. No longer geopolitical, although it's still basically the same content, the same Jordan.
Right.
And you listen to this show or listen to Oil and Gas Industry Leaders, only you, audience, can help us pick a winner. So If you're Team Paige, go to the merch store. Go to OGN.com, hit merch, and buy the shirt with Paige's face on it. If you're Team Paige, if you're Team Jordan, go to the same merch store and buy his coffee mug with his new artwork on it. And we're going to keep an eye on this neck and neck race to see who dominates the oil and gas merch.
I mean, even get an oil and gas this week shirt.
I am surprised nobody's bought one. I would have thought we would have sold the bejeebies out of that.
I thought so too. Maybe we need to redesign it.
It's me.
I know.
No, I mean, think about it. People are buying it with your face on it, but people won't buy it with your face and my face on it.
I mean, fair.
I have a face for podcasting, I guess. Speaking of that, we have a whole bunch of live podcasts and speaking engagements we're doing this year, but we still have space for more. So if you're like myself or any of our experts to come deliver a keynote, come to your sales and marketing event, come to your conference, we do that a lot, bring a live podcast. One of the things that goes over really well is if you're having a company event and you have a cocktail hour, bring us in as entertainment. People love to have oil and gas this week in there while they're drinking. And it makes the show go by quicker, too, because everybody's drinking.
Including myself. Yeah.
But reach out to us. Happy to share the details. First Friday Q&A, you know the drill. Go to OGN.com. Leave us a question. Remember, the goal is not to stump Paige and I, but to educate the audiences. Also, hit us up on social media. Robert, our new hire that's going to run a TikTok account, is working.
Our social media in general,
right. But we're going to start with TikTok. Is working on his strategy right now. So very soon we'll have a TikTok presence that will develop to a strong TikTok presence, and you'll be able to engage with us on other platforms. But for now, LinkedIn is where it's at. So if you have a question or something and you don't want to go to All Guests this week and ask it, just hit us up on LinkedIn, ask a question.
Don't ask me, ask Mark. Yeah.
Ready to get out of here?
Yep.
Remember, folks, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week Podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.